Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is the all-new All Ball. We have a great guest for you on this version of the All Ball podcast. Lil Wayne's going to join us. We'll talk about his feelings on the Lakers winning a championship. Wait to hear his thoughts on Jordan versus LeBron now. And, of course, we'll hear about his story, some really, really fun stuff, including wait to hear about his trip to Riyadh, which I believe was his last live performance before quarantine. You're going to love it. I just told my son the story and he was dying. He's an amazing story. We're joining you here the morning after the NBA championship, right? I'm recording this right after the NBA championship was decided. LeBron's the MVP. The Lakers completely and utterly eviscerated the Miami Heat. The Heat, they just ran out of gas, ran out of magic. And I do think it's fair to point out that the Lakers didn't play the Clippers, the Bucks, the Celtics, the 76ers, you know, viewed as the Raptors, the elite teams. Obviously, the Warriors shut it down for the year, and the Brooklyn Nets really chose not to compete with their elite-level players. That said, we don't go back historically through most other championships and point out that Magic was hurt when the Pistons won their second back-to-back title, that Magic was hurt during the back-to-back NBA title run for the Detroit Pistons, or that Larry Bird never played against Isaiah and the Celtics in either the 2 years that they won the championship. Like, we don't go back and do that. So let's not go back and totally do that and take away from what LeBron was able to do. In the moment, though, and in painting pure context, is fair, right? Like, they were supposed to play the Clippers. The Clippers choked against the Denver Nuggets. And so they didn't play the elite teams of the NBA. That said, there were still challenges. They didn't have Avery Bradley. They needed Rajon Rondo to somehow conjure up this playoff Rondo thing that most people thought, no way, and myself included. And yet he did kind of conjure it up. They found a way to cobble together a backcourt and make it work. This without Kyle Kuzma being anywhere near what they hoped he would be. I think Anthony Davis was better than anyone could have hoped he could be because he competed at both ends. And there were times in which he carried the team offensively, which was a big question for Anthony Davis coming out of his run with the Pelicans, which is basically, did he have the ability to carry a basketball team? And obviously without LeBron, the answer is no, but with LeBron, the answer was a resounding yes. It was a fascinating year, but the Lakers won the championship. They weren't always super cohesive, even in the bubble, that there were moments in which they were ready to go. There was frustrations that Avery Bradley didn't make the trip. There were frustrations in just kind of the fact that they're sitting in a hotel for months on end. And I think the couple things that helped them were, one, they had a couple extra days off when the entire league was protesting what happened in Kenosha. That really helped them. They were tired. They were fried. Shortly thereafter, their families arrived, which really rejuvenated a lot of the older players things had grown very, very stale. And then, remember, they played the Houston Rockets, who were coming off of a 7-game series, so they were a little bit gassed. And the Rockets winning the first game kind of woke them up, and they decided to kind of squish them, just squash them like a bug, right? Then they got the Denver Nuggets. Again, coming off a 7-game series, doesn't hurt that they're exhausted. And doesn't hurt that they're not nearly as good as the Clippers, or they're very young and they didn't have a good matchup, especially with LeBron, but slightly with Anthony Davis as well. But I think when the Clippers lost, combined with the other families and how well they played against the Rockets, there was the, all right, well, we're here. What the hell? Let's just go win the whole thing. All we need is 8 more games. So the Clippers lose, they get an upset and really didn't match up as well with the Boston Celtics. They get the Miami Heat, and for the most part, they take care of business. Now, the Heat, it should be recognized, are very well coached, are a great organization. And I do think Jimmy Butler's kind of warrior status took on kind of mythical proportions there in the NBA Finals, but it was worth it. He was really, really good. Does it feel the same as other NBA championships? Of course not. But we don't go back, or at least I don't go back and say, well, hey, the Spurs won 2 lockout, post-lockout championships, do we? We kind of do it against the Golden State Warriors because the first year they won the NBA championship, everybody was without their point guard, including the Cavs, who lost Kyrie after game one or in the overtime of game one. So we do paint a true context of things, and it's fair in the true context of it. nonetheless, it's title number 17 for the Lakers, title number 4 for LeBron. He was fantastic. Was he as good at 35 as Jordan was at 35? Probably not, but he's also different. But like, let's see what happens next year. Let's see what the Warriors look like next year. Let's see what the Clippers look like next year. Let's see what the Lakers look like next year. Do they trade Kuzma? Do they move some pieces around? Do they find a starting caliber point guard? Do they go out and acquire another star as LeBron ages? I don't know the answer to it. But in the short term, I do think we can celebrate just how cohesive they were, how well coached they were. Frank Vogel and his staff deserves a shout out, and how good their defense was. The NBA pulled off the bubble. Did it hurt their ratings? Of course. You know, every game kind of looked the same. It just did. And when the Lakers win an NBA championship, instead of doing Staples and the vision of Kobe Bryant's jersey and all those other jerseys in the rafters aren't there, it's a different feeling. But considering all the other things going on in the world, I think Adam Silver deserves a bit of a tip of the cap, don't you? All right, we got some other basketball stuff to talk about. Interesting stuff going on in college basketball. I think later on this week, I'll drop another pod. We'll talk about Greg Marshall and the mess that is Wichita State, as well as this upcoming basketball season, which is going to be playing these mini bubbles. And oh yeah, by the way, won't be overshadowed for a good portion of time by the NBA, because the NBA is probably not going to start till January. But let's get to our discussion with the great little Wayne. All right, let's welcome him in. I think you see him every morning when you see Undisputed. He is a legend in the rap business, but he's a legend in the sports television business as well. He's Lil Wayne. Okay, so look, we're recording this. The Lakers just won their 17th title. I see wearing purple and gold. Like, when did you be? Are you just LeBron Laker fan? Are you Kobe Laker fan? Are you back in the day Magic Laker fan?
Kobe. Went from being the Michael Jordan fan straight to the Kobe fan. It's been Lakers ever since.
Did you meet Kobe?
Yes, I met him a whole lot of times. I've actually had photo shoots with him. It was a real big photo shoot we had with the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
When was that? Do you know?
I don't remember the year, but man, we spoke a lot, and we also had some things going together that we was working on actually before he passed.
Yeah, it's interesting. Before he passed, I got a chance to have drinks with him one night, and I had met him a couple of times, but like getting down and sitting down with him, yeah, completely different than anything. I mean, I think any sort of predetermined thought on what he would be, like a brilliant dude. All right, so go, but there's like different Kobes, right? Because when Kobe first got in the league, he tried to talk like Mike, right? Yeah. Then he tried to be hood a little bit. He was like hip hop Kobe
with the bush.
Yes. And then he just kind of started to mature and be like, I'm just gonna be me, like super smart Mamba Kobe.
I think that point came after. I think that Kobe mentality, that Mamba mentality, Kobe came after what? I think about what, after the third or fourth ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He kind of changed and he evolved. So when you first met him,
yeah,
what Kobe was it?
When I first met him, he was more of the hip hop Kobe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
he just wanted to hang, and you're like,
I just wanted to kick it. Wiz was popping tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so when they signed LeBron, were you like, some guys were like, man, I don't like, because LeBron and Kobe, they never played in the playoffs, right? Never played in the finals, right? And I talked to Kobe a little bit before he died about it, and he was like, he totally embraced him. Mm-hmm. Privately, it wasn't that he didn't embrace him, he was just like, look, we're not wired the same. Like, we're okay, we're good. But we're different kinds of dudes. For you personally, as friends with Kobe, Laker fan, and as a mogul in your own right, what did you think when LeBron came over?
First thing I thought was pressure. That's the first thing I thought. I was like, pressure, man. I was like Bron loves pressure. I was like, he loves pressure. And I was like, you know, it's kind of like watching, you know, you hate bringing up names because you don't want people to be like, are you comparing this? But it's kind of like when you watch Tom Brady, you just see all the pressure just keep piling up on him. And you're like, are you really going to break through this too? And he breaks through that and wins it. So it's kind of like, that's how the first thing that popped up in my mind was pressure. I was like, wow, man, he's going to LA with this? I was like, and then the way the team was looking at the time, I was like, man. But then you started hearing things about who's going to be there with him, who's coming with him, who's going there with him. And then you start seeing all those people they were saying that was going there with him going other places, you know?
Yeah.
That's when I started really like pressure, man. I was wondering if he was going to be able to push through all this pressure that was going on. Just the thing.
I feel like he used the first year to like figure out
the house thing,
figure out who I'm down with.
Exactly. I thought the painting that they had the mural. Remember they had the mural, and then they defaced the mural. I thought that right there was a big. I thought to me, if I put myself tried to put myself in his shoes, and I said, man, I would have had to have a sit down with my wife that night and figure out, you know, like, do we stay here or do we continue? You know, do we continue doing this or do we go back?
You also have to think like, look, when he went to Miami, they had a rock star concert for him, right? That's when it not one, not two, not right. When he goes back to Cleveland, it's like a homecoming. It's a celebration. Now he comes to LA and they're like, all right, let me know when you win a championship. Right? Like just enough, right? So that had to be super weird to him. I mean, it had to be super, super weird to him.
I think it wasn't so weird because of that Cleveland, because of that time when he went back to Cleveland. So much was expected of him, and he came through. He came through, and so I think that may have taken some of the pressure that you and I probably, and the weirdness that you're thinking, and the pressure that I'm thinking, that probably took some of that away from it because he probably felt that he'd been through such a thing before.
Hmm. Okay, so now they win it. Like, are you, you were a Mike guy, I was a Mike guy. I'm still a Mike guy as the GOAT. Does this change your argument at all?
What'd you say? I was laughing at what you said?
Does it change it? Like, are you now, all right, now LeBron's the greatest of all time. Does it change because they just won a championship?
I can't lie to you. I literally was just talking to my girl. We was watching. She's a Heat fan, and we was watching. That's why the hat is on. Just all in her. I honestly told her, I was like, you know, to see him do it with his third team, you know, like to see him do it with the third team, like that being a, because I'm with you, I'm Jordan all the way. I'm Jordan all the way. I lived through those days and it was just, it's impossible to anybody to do that again. But man, to see him do it with his third team, I had to think about it. I had to think.
It's definitely, look, it's different. He's a different kind of player. He's a different kind of dude. We reached peak craziness on Friday night when people were saying he should have shot the ball instead of passed to Danny Green. Right? Like, Danny Green is on the court for one reason, to make that shot. Now, he didn't do his job, but I mean, that's basketball, right? You get help, three, four dudes on you, you pass off, wide open dude. He just missed it. But we reached this like peak craziness and we forget that like Jordan actually had to learn to pass, you know, to win championships, whereas LeBron kind of had to learn to take over in order to win championships. That's kind of the difference.
That's a big difference, a huge difference.
Let's talk about you, all right? Lakers won, we can get back to that. You've been doing this a long time. You signed your first deal when you're 12 years old. Okay, so you grew up outside New Orleans, right? When did you start rapping? Like, huh?
I grew up in New Orleans. I grew up in New Orleans.
Well, I mean, like, I don't know how it breaks down in terms of what's like where in New Orleans specifically.
I'm from Carrollton. Carrollton. Yeah.
It's kind of. Okay, so what was like? Paint me a picture of your childhood. Like, I know your biological dad left when they got divorced when you're two. Yeah. Right? I know some of that stuff, but paint me a picture of what you were like growing up.
I was a great kid. I was a great kid. I was the only child for a long time. So I was a great kid. Mom had no problems with me, gave my mom no problems till I hit a certain age, like everybody does, like every kid does. And then, but I was real good with work, you know, with the words and with performing in front of people. And so Moms obviously wanted me. I was an A student, straight A student. So Moms honestly wanted me to be a lawyer, a doctor, like no less. Like no less. Not going to be anything less than a lawyer, a doctor. You're too smart. So that was the whole rap thing to her was just like, I'll never let you be a rapper. You're too smart to do that. And so it took someone else it took my stepfather to step into her ear and let her know that. Yeah, you know, combined with this smart and him being smart and him doing rap, it's almost like it's not going to be him just being a rapper. It's going to be him mastering it. And so he had to work that over to her. And once he did, she went with it. And here we are.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, it's interesting because so my son's 11 years old. He loves your work. He loves rap. And he's always asking, like, Dad, how do they know? How do they have the ability to put these words together? So, I mean, like, did you read a lot? Did you just have great natural depth to your vocabulary? Like, where does it come from?
So, the performance part comes from just New Orleans. In New Orleans, we have, I know you already know, we have Mardi Gras. We celebrate for anything in New Orleans.
Yeah.
In New Orleans, we have, everybody's heard of a block party before. Everybody heard of that. We have them every week in New Orleans when I was growing up. So the mic, anyone can come up and grab the mic. The DJ will let anyone grab the mic. But, you know, obviously we're not about to let anyone say anything. Got a whole crowd of people out there. So that's where the performing comes from for me, me grabbing that mic and making sure I have something to say when I grab it. Now the words, meet the words, the way I used the words was school, plain and simple. I was 11 years old. So I was literally still doing homework, you know? And so I would listen to the rappers that's rapping. You guys are grown, you know, I'm like, these are adults. They're not being told these things. I'm being told every day. So I applied it. I took what I was hearing the adults say, what my teacher was saying, and I applied it and put it together and start noticing that I was different and unique. And once I figured that out, I ran with it.
You know, so it's interesting. So I'm going to college in the like late 90s, right? And I view that as one of the dark ages of rap. I'm just to be honest with you. And some of it was because some of that down south stuff, like make him say, right? And you had like mystical and there was like a little anger to it, but it wasn't batty batty rowdy rowdy was big. But it maybe lacked the imagination that,
man,
that,
you that know, we see. You know, at the time we was literally their rivals. Everybody named every name you just said. So I was, you know, we at the time we was literally like, what are you talking about?
I didn't get it. I was like, I don't. This is not interesting to me, right? Like I want to be taken to a different place. And it's just, there's just an anger to it. Although I like X a little bit, like DMX,
I just done a feature for X recently, man. X about to come back out, man.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're 12 years, what is it like, your first album was when you're 12,
yeah.
What's that process like?
As far as the recording process, it was funny because Baby the Birdman, but he would have to make sure that I would have to do all my recording before a certain hour because I had to be home because I had school the next day. Yeah, so that part right there was just always funny. And when the album came out, the best part of it for me was that I was still a kid. I was still in school. So it was awesome for me to prove to my friends that this is actually me on this CD. Because we didn't have the album, we didn't have our faces on the album.
Right. Right.
So because of that, I had to let them hear it and all, just that whole process of people understanding that that's the little kid that raps, that was the greatest thing ever for me.
What'd your mom say?
She still needed proof. She still needed more proof. She probably was like some of the, like you said, the Laker fans when Brian came in. That's cool, but you need to win this championship. She needed a Grammy.
Yeah, when you went platinum in your first song. Oh, wow. That was pretty good proof. Now she was a cook growing up, right?
Yeah, yes, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, do I have to go like, was it all cliche? Like, was it at, like, what was she? What is her go-to meal? You come home, you're like, Mom, just make me my favorite meal. What is it?
My favorite meal.
She would make.
My favorite meal was simply potatoes and smoked sausage. That was my favorite meal. It's just the way she makes it. I don't know. I don't even, just the way she makes it. She put two, you know, she seasoned it up. And she would always say, though, obviously I'm not the biggest guy in the world. So she would always say, she loved me because I'd come home and she'd cook all day at work and come home to me. And I wouldn't want nothing to eat, but probably some, Kraft macaroni and cheese or probably some cereal. You know, and I was super full, and I'm full after that. Now I have a little brother. He's about 18. He's about 6'2", 280. He played football. So she's like, wow, what a difference. I used to come home to you and you'd be full off of cereal. And every night in the kitchen for me, for him, is Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so he's like completely different kid growing up, completely different life, and for her, a completely different job. Okay, so you dropped the first album, part of, is 12 years old.
Yeah.
you keep going to school or you're like, I'm out?
I kept going to school. I had to keep going to school. She needed more proof. And what happened was then at 14, I dropped a solo album. And that solo album went platinum.
Yes.
That was her proof. Her proof was my first paycheck. Yeah, my first check. I got two checks in the same week. And the first one I was a kid, she let me spend like $4,500. I went and bought a Nissan Pathfinder.
All right.
And so because of the movie New Jersey Running, because of Biggie, and it was taking all those Forerunners. So yeah, I was on
dark
stuff. But then when we signed a major deal with Universal, there was 1 week, and I told her, I was like, hey, I think my first check is coming from my album. And she was like, okay, that's fine. And so when I gave it to her, it was about $80,000. Then the next check came within that same week. It was like $116,000. And none of them was the actual check I was telling her that's coming. I was like, this is just some extra. She came to my room one day and she was like, is this the type of money you're gonna be making normally? And I was like, I don't plan on stopping, and I'm the youngest out of them all. And she was like, she went back in her room and I could hear her talking on the phone with her friend or something. And so she really started considering taking me out of school. And within probably that month, I was pulled out of school.
Do you remember where you were when you were told it went platinum?
In school.
Did somebody like elbow you? Somebody come into school? Somebody get into class? Like, how'd you find out?
Yeah, friends that was into things like that. Friends that checked my album sales and things. Friends that's gonna always check the bill. But you know, you got those friends that's gonna always let you know, man, such a Mystical sold more than you just things like that.
Yeah. So,
Once they saw that trend, you know what I mean? That by my name, they was, yo, and blah, blah. And so also, but Baby and them, they just to sell 100,000 copies in the first week, that used to be a goal for us at Cash Money. And so that was a personal goal that we always had. You must sell 100,000 copies in the first week. So I out-topped that in that first week. So that was already, Baby and them had already told me, you're probably about to go platinum. I had sold way more than I was supposed to way more than 100,000 in the first week. So that right there they already had congratulated me and I already had that feeling.
See, you mentioned Cash Money. All right. So that's when you got your start with Cash Money. Yeah. What was that like though back then? Like, was it, I mean, I don't know what my imagination tells me, but what was it like when you guys were all kind of up and coming together?
First of all, Cash Money, they were huge in New Orleans.
Right.
They were before me, period. They were just huge in New Orleans. They were the hugest record label. The radio stations played nothing but Cash Money records. And Master P and No Limit, they came up after Cash Money. And so, but Cash Money was the local gods. So with that said, once I got with them, I was still in awe that I am even being able to be around these guys. So everything for me was still just, I was just extra happy to do it. And so coming up with them, I never felt that we were struggling to come up. And I kind of looked at it like we saw the door in front of us and we ran through it.
When was the time to which you felt like outside of NOLA that you felt, oh, okay, this is like, I know when you go platinum, people obviously take notice. It's a ridiculous number of albums being sold. Mm-hmm. But when was the time which you're outside of your hometown and everywhere that you go, people recognize you? You know, you hear your music on the radio, you see people bumping your music when you guys are right around. When was that time? You're like, oh, this is big.
Like you said, I, like I told you earlier, I was so used to performing and so used to getting a crowd reaction. So when I would go places in the South and get that reaction, I'm always happy to get any kind of reaction. I love, like I said, that's my goal, my drive, the reaction. But when I went to New York, Doug, and I went to New York for the first time and walked through, you know, like I would see on the movies and see all the people walking in Manhattan, I expected to be one of the people, you know, just walking about. And right. Once I then noticed that I couldn't walk about because everybody, that's when it hit me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's got to be, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. This is more of a producer question, but again, this is like, I'm like reliving my childhood through my son. And he asked me like some really good questions. He's like, how do they collaborate? How do they put the beats together? How do they figure everything out? So like, do you wait, a track is laid out and then you rap to the track, or do you write out what you want, what you're going to say, and then somebody finds a track to match to it? Like, how does it all come together?
Every single way you just said, there's no one way. Every single way you said, there's producers that already have a name. You know, there's great producers that you know them for their name, Timbaland, Swizz Beatz, people like that. You know what I mean? So with those people, you know, they'll send you a batch of beats. I mean, like 10 to 12 beats. And, you know, you make the most, you pick one, you pick whatever you like out of them, and you make the most of it, you make a song to it, like you just said. But then you can get, there's a time when you have your own people. And so that, what I mean by that is your producer is in the studio with you, and he or she is watching you come up, they're with you coming up with your ideas, and they're listening to what you come up with, and they start working, and they start making something to it. So if you tell them, I'm coming up with something for love, I'm coming up with something dark, they already know what to do it. But for me, the way I usually do it, give me the beat. Yeah.
Give me the beat. Okay. So, and do you know, like, I feel like as a listener, I can tell you, like, when the first bar, like, oh, that's a hit. Right, I got that. That's it. Can you listen to a beat and like, I got this, or do you listen to it all the way through?
Definitely. As soon as the intro come on, if I don't like something that just happened, you better cut that one off. Yeah.
Why do so many guys try and sound like Drake right now? Like, I get it, but it does feel like there's like, wait, he's doing Drake. Like, that's like, that would be like me doing a Cowherd impression all the time, like that. You know, or doing Skip or whatever, but like, it does feel like everybody's decided, you know, I used to have my own style, but now I'm just going to do Drake because the Drake thing works.
So what it is the way I can answer that, I would say, obviously the obvious reason would be because it's working. It works.
Yeah.
Everybody going to try to do it, it works. But for some reason, I think, you know, when you do something, when people start doing exactly what you're doing and things like that, they start thinking they could do it better than you, you know? And so some people probably, and again, it's either those two things. Either you think I could do it better than, or you're thinking, shoot, is what's working? Let's keep it moving. I won't do exactly what's working. And I guess that's how I can't answer it because I do me.
I know you do. That's one of the things I respect most about you. It's interesting. You've been in the game a long time now, right? Like, you're not old. Like, we're not retiring you, but you've been, but it has, how much has it changed now with people downloading things and in terms of the finances to it, in terms of the performances? I want to get to that, what it's like to not perform for like a year now. But in terms of the game itself, recording and how you see things downloaded and how you're paid, how much has that changed here in the last 5 years?
There's a colossal change, dog. Colossal change. The new artists today, I try my hardest to tell them or show them some kind of way to tell them that the question you asked me before about what that feeling feels like when someone comes to tell you that, hey, you just went platinum, or hey, you know, I just checked the charts. And to remember what they have to consider, what I always consider is that meant at those times, that meant someone physically went out and bought my stuff.
Yeah.
Days is totally different, and you can get it, you know, with the swipe of a finger and things like that. So it the obviously that changes it hugely financially, you know, hugely. Anyone can lose. When I started it, you had, you know, it was like the league, you know, when they tell you any league, NBA, NFL, when they tell you those, when they give you that percentage, you know, when they tell you there's a zillion kids that went to college that plays this sport,
only 1%. Yeah.
Yeah. That thing. So that's how it was when I stepped in it, you know, like I knew a billion people rapping, only one or two of them made it, you know? And now if I know a billion people rapping, I'm probably about to see a billion videos.
Yeah, the video thing has changed though too, right? I mean, like I was talking about this on my show like last week when we were talking, who was like Van Halen, right? Like I remember Hot for Teacher. Like that was a video I remember. I remember, you know, Dire Straits. I remember Christmas in Hollis with Run DMC, right? Yes. But I also remember what used to suck was you would have to buy like the full cassette. You'd have the dual cassette players. I remember when the dual cassette players came out. You had to buy the full cassette and then you dub it on your mixtape.
Yeah.
Your mixtape.
Yeah. Right?
And then the CDs came out and people stopped knowing the names of songs. Like, oh, you got to get number two.
Number two. I'm that guy. Yeah.
Now you have to know the names, or you kind of have to know who the at least the artist is. But that's even hard because you got Lil Baby and you got Da Baby, and I get confused as to which is which.
And then my daddy called himself Baby, so you know, it's not going on out here yet. Yeah.
So, what about the performing? Like, you are somebody who, when you're in a room, it energizes you, right? And when was the last time you were on the stage in front of people?
Man, I want to say, I think...
Super Bowl?
I think so, that party, yeah. I think so, Doug. I think that might have been the last time I was on. If not, I can't really recall nothing other than Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Other than that, I can't
remember. Wait. Don't, I got something in that story. So how does an appearance in Riyadh come to be? Like, your boy, your agent calls you, or like you get a call, like, do you want to go to Riyadh? And you're like, how much? They're like, you know, how does it work?
You just hit it on the head, dog. Yeah,
I got it. Steve Harvey said, I don't go anywhere for 100 grand, 250. I'm in. That's what he said, right? Sure. So give me the Riyadh phone call. What was that?
Put it like this: Steve Harvey is nicer than me. He's much nicer than me. Yeah, because once.
Okay, so you did, like, did they fly you private, or did you go like Air Emirates?
Doug, I haven't. Thank God, I'm not going to wood. I haven't seen a commercial airline in about 17 years.
Okay, so you get on, you fly to Riyadh.
Fly to Riyadh. So
open the door, and then what?
Man, it's a funny story. So what happens is, I get there. When you fly private, if you're gonna land at a weird time, like 4 a.m. type of thing, they usually just have, because you got to go through customs, they usually just have about 5 or 6 people set up to be there for you, you know, for you guys to get there, put you through the whole situation, so they could go home as well. And so that's how it was set up. Had about 10 people, staff members there. Everything was going well. I put my backpack on a little thing that goes through the whatever. And so the lady stops it. She says, she can't look at you because it's Saudi Arabia. She can't even look you in the eyes. So she's like, you got too much. You have over $25,000 worth of jewelry. I think she was saying, so I have to declare it. I don't know. So I have no patience, Doug. I was just like, my pilot was like, same guy been flying me for 17 years. He was like, you know what, Wayne, I'm tired. But he was like, Dubai is about 2 hours away. He was like, I can make it to Dubai. We can spend the night in Dubai if that's what you want to do, if you don't want to do it. I was like, man, that sounds awesome. So I was like, I was like, well, I'm not doing this. I went and got back on my plane. I was like, forget it. I don't know what she trying to say. I don't know, like 25. I'm like, whatever. I'm not trying to even hear how it goes. I'm not going. I'm not doing the show. I'm going to Dubai. I already got paid. You know, I don't get paid. You know, I don't even step on a plane before I even. So I already got paid. I'm like, I'm not doing the show. Let the promoter know they don't want to let me in the country. So I'm gone. And so while I'm sitting on the plane waiting to leave, they come on the plane and say, hey, his excellency required sincerely apologizes and said that you won't have not a problem walking through here. I told my bro Matt, I said, listen, I'm not getting off this plane if they tell me one thing, everybody around here is fired. And so they're like, bro, listen, he said you're walking straight through. So, Doug, these same people, the staff who was in there, who was telling us you got too much jewelry, when we walked back in there, everybody had their heads down. They wouldn't, like, when I, listen, Doug, they were so, it was so weird. We literally walked up to them doing this to their faces. Like, you know, you walk up to a statue. We were literally doing this. You know, like, it's something, like, who is His Excellency? He was like, His Excellency. They was like, His Excellency told him that you must walk straight through and everybody with you. They better not tell y'all nothing. They didn't tell us nothing. I'm not finished, Doug. So as I'm in my room, I get another text that said, His Excellency wants to come to your room and apologize personally. I was like, okay, it's all good. He comes up there. I meet him, whatever. He takes me to another room in my own hotel room. He takes me away from the crowd to talk to me personally. And he said, so what happened? I said, well, she said, I couldn't get in because of my jewelry, $25,000. He goes bananas. He's, what? $25,000? He called this guy he had with him. I think it was his son. He was like, hey, come. He bring a box. And he was like, $25,000. I bring you gift more than $25,000. I opened the box. It's a Frank Mueller watch. That watch costs over $100,000. I know which watch. I know the watch. So I was like, he was like, this is my apologized gift for you. And so she, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, it's all. He said, she will be punished. I said, no, it's okay. It's okay. He grabbed my hand, Doug. He grabbed my hand. He said, she will be punished. I said, no, but listen, I'm not finished, Doug. This man, he said, I wish I could come to your show tonight, but thank you for doing it, whatever. He gave me the watch. At the front door, before I closed my door, he looked at me, he said, Ferrari or Lamborghini? I thought it was a general question, Doug. I said, Lamborghini, everybody know Lamborghini. He was like, favorite color? I said, black. I said, in front of your house in 3 weeks. I am so sorry for this. This will never happen again. I need you back. I said, okay, I understand. We think he's joking. So he got down. We still list. We literally still standing in the door and haven't closed the door. He's been walked off. He's about to make the left to go to the elevators. I yelled out. Cause I said, my girl, she like, wow. I'm like, man, he ain't even asked me what kind of Lamborghini I wanted. That's how you know he just stunting. So I said, Lamborghini truck, Lamborghini truck. Doug, that truck was in front of my house in a month with that. And I'm not joking, bro. And so listen, I had a problem leaving the country though. The same little staff tried to give me another problem. So I got mad. I left the watch there that day.
What?
Listen, I was that. I told you, Doug.
If you need me to go pick it up for you, let me know. I will go. I'm your man. I will go pick it up for you.
Doug, I have no patience. Listen, I left the watch because I was like, I don't even want this, man. I got him like, I don't want to tell His Excellency I ain't never coming back. Y'all got me going through this. When the truck showed up, the watch was on the passenger seat.
Okay, now you got to tell me what that truck's like to drive because there's one in the parking garage at work. What?
Super Bowl weekend.
But what is it? Because I always thought, like, okay, it kind of defeats the purpose of a Lamborghini to get a truck, but I do like the truck better than the Lamborghini, better than the coupe, right? Yeah. What's it like to drive?
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's fast. It's very fast. Very fast. Very, very, very
best
fast.
Car you've ever driven?
No, I just got a McLaren for my birthday.
Oh, color? Black?
Yeah.
Like, when you pick out a McLaren, now it's for your birthday. Did somebody get it for you or you got it yourself?
I got it for me. Mac, who set up all of that. Mac got it for me. That was his gift to me for my birthday, McLaren.
But did he know, like, I mean, everybody knows your favorite color is black. Did he know, like, interior? Do you get all that stuff picked out or how'd that work?
Oh, him. He know I love it. He know I like it. Actually, it's black, but it's, he got it. He went a little over. He went black, on opal black. So when the sun hits it, it shines purple. And normal is black. And normal, yeah. See, he went a little. That's my brother, Mac. I love him.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Happy birthday. Obviously, I didn't bring you anything. that's none of my friends get me Lamborghinis or McLarens for my birthday. That just doesn't happen to me. Like
everybody,
they get to, hey, happy birthday.
Exactly. Everybody hit me up and told me when he showed everybody. Everybody hit me up and was like, "Tell Mac, thank you. I won't be getting you a gift this year."
It's funny, when I was at CBS, it was like a test I had every year to see if anybody knew my birthday there, right? Like literally no one knew my birthday. And it was like a kind of a running joke with like me and like one of my friends, like, let's see this year if they know it's my birthday. And I'd work and like not and like a couple of days later somebody would hit me up like, oh hey, I saw like it was your birthday, my bad. Like no one literally no one knew. I was like, this is not the place. Okay, so you go from 12. Mm-hmm. Then you drop an album, you're 14, is platinum. Mm-hmm. Here's the biggest question. I did the NBA draft for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I would ask guys all the time, like, okay, because when you interview a guy right after he's drafted the NBA draft, they're always the nicest, most humble kids ever, mm-hmm. right? They thank God, they thank their parents, they thank their AAU coach. They're so happy to be. There's always one or two kids that are already kind of too far gone or whatever. For the most part, they're unbelievable.
Exactly.
And then there's like a percentage of them that just, you know, they're feeling themselves after a while and they lose track of that person.
Lose track of everything.
Look, obviously you live a different lifestyle than you did growing up in New Orleans, right? But I don't know if you remember this. We actually met at ESPN. You popped your head in. You're like, golly, what's up, man? I love you. I was like, did Little Wayne just say what's up to me? Like, right? And when I've seen you now, you're the exact same person. How do you have stardom when you're 12 and 14 and you get these six-figure checks to your mom to where you're not freaking out, but she is, right? And not change as a human being. How do you do that?
I credited all that to my mom. So what I was going to say, she didn't freak out when she got the, what she actually did was I gave her the check, and being her, how I am being, how the reason why I'm me, she was like, when she did ask me that question, she was like, so this is the type of money you're going to be getting? I was like, yeah. I was like, and this is all, she's like, okay, I don't want it. She's like, take it back. So I was like, no. So we literally had one of those, so we had one of those. And so what she went did and built her own house right around the corner from my house. I didn't get why she did that. And so, like I said, just the humbleness of her is the reason why I'm who I am and how I am. And also, me starting off so young at 12 has a lot to do with it. Had a lot to do with it. I wasn't even old enough to perceive the seriousness or the realness of the money I was, you know, of the money I was getting. So that also had a lot to do with, you know, with me not caring about if it's the right amount and, you know, if I'm being shorted and that type of thing. That also had a lot to do with it, me being young and understand my mom just not even expecting her 14-year-old to be coming to be paying the bills, let alone buying houses and, you know what I mean? So that right there, let alone the age had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, but childhood actors, they don't, I mean, like, look, how many childhood actors, they fall off the deep end.
Acting is a different, you know, you go to school and stuff for that. And so you get prepped and stuff for that type of thing. And this is more of a talent. And, you know, like my mom was my mom, you're going to go to school. I understand you can shoot 3-pointers with your eyes closed, but you're going to go to school. So I have to show her that, no, that eye closed 3-point shot is going to get us there. You know, so you have to go with what you know.
And all right, here's something I've always wondered. Okay. When you're performing in front of people,
yeah,
how do you decide whether or not you keep it with what it sounds like on the album, or you just you freestyle and you do a little something different? Like how do you decide? Is it always like, is it the same no matter what, or is it just different based upon the performance, what you're feeling that night? How do you decide?
Well, if it's my show, that means I control the way I'm going, the way everything goes. I never perform with words, meaning so you're going to get, you know, you're going to get something. Something's going to always be something new that night, because I never perform. I'm always doing the show. I do the song with just the beat and just the band. So as long as it's live, nothing better than a live performance. So that's the way I do mine. Now, when you do TV shows and performances for shows and things like the television shows and things like that, they may require the words. You know, they may require, we want the words in there. We want the chorus in there, things like that. And so for those performances, I have to practice. I have to make sure I got my words together because I work so much. So the only words that be on my mind is whatever I just finished recording that night before. You know, so I have to go back and I have to literally study my song and all that. And so I like the challenge, though.
What do you not do that you want to do? Like, because now you're powerful enough that if you want to be on one of the debate shows for sports, you can, right? If you want to tour, you can. You want to drop albums, you can. You want to chill and count your money, you can. What do you not do enough that you want to do more of?
That's a good question. I guess I don't want to sound cliche and answer it with a cliche answer. And like say, you know, be around my family more, be with my kids more, because I do that as much as I can as well. And that's beautiful. Obviously, Doug, I'm blessed. There isn't anything that I don't want, there isn't anything out there. I'm very blessed.
Okay. So obviously you start touring, doing shows, and you fly private. What's your day of like? Do you hoop the day of? Do you work out? Are you like, I gotta get into a mental place of Zen? Like, what are you the day of there's a big performance? Say you're going back home, okay? You're gonna perform in NOLA, big show. You're the headliner. What do you do that day?
Everything's always the same with me. I'm procedure like, dude, I'm not gonna do nothing big, nothing out the way. I'm not gonna make my mama try to cook something special. I'm not, none of that. So give me the time I need to be on stage, give me the time I need to be at the venue, Give me, let me get some clothes, some looks. Let me see what I want to wear. That's the most important part. That's probably the hardest thing for me.
Do you pick it out yourself?
Shout out to Marissa. That's been my stylist forever. It's me and Marissa. We go back and forth, but that's the funnest part of a show for me. What am I going to wear? That is the coolest part. Other than that, nothing out the way. When you said Nola, so the only thing would be different about that would be me making sure everybody that's been hitting me up, that's trying to make it to the show.
Getting a ticket. Yeah, everybody wants a free ticket. Favorite kicks to wear when you're performing? Favorite sneakers?
I don't have a favorite sneaker because Marissa is going to always have 1,000 options, and she has a backstory for every option. It's kind of like those Peyton Manning commercials when he got the backstory. Yeah, that's Marissa.
Yeah.
Marissa about her shoes. Yeah, so it's whatever she say goes.
Do they have to be a certain, like, those shoes aren't comfortable? Like, I don't care how much you like them. They got to be comfortable.
Depends on how dope they are. They could be.
That's a good point.
If they too dope, I got to go out there and rock them.
It's funny because I had, like, when my son was younger, I got him some Jordans, some of those 13s, and I got him, he had some Air Force Ones, and he didn't like them. And so he was like, the other day, when I texted you there while I was coaching him in a basketball tournament, he's like, Dad, did you see those Air Force Ones that guy had on? Those are nice. I was like, Hayes, I got you some Air Force Ones. I got you some Jordans. Like, you didn't like them. He's like, yeah, I was an idiot. I didn't know anything about shoes then. Those were great. Can you give me some more? He never wore them. He's like, I don't even like these shoes. I was like, do you know how cool those shoes are? You know, here's the thing about basketball sneakers. Yeah. And you can appreciate this because you know Kobe. Yeah. So Kobe changed the game, right, when he had the low tops. Because forever, hoop sneakers were high or mid.
Yeah.
So this is my biggest takeaway from my Kobe dinner. So he's telling me about all the different things he's doing. And I was like, look, man, here's what I want to know. Who convinced you to wear low tops? And in like his typical Kobe fashion, I don't know if he ever broke this down for you. He was like, well, I had somebody, there's a study out there that like people don't actually get hurt because of their high tops. I was like, yeah, of course. Like if you have a bad ankle, or if you're worried, you wear an ankle brace or you get taped. He's like, exactly. He's like, high tops don't prevent anybody. He's like, actually that was a myth perpetuated by Nike. Because when they were trying to sell high tops, everybody's trying to sell the most stable ankle. This is going back to the 80s when it was really competitive with Adidas had what's called the Y bar. He went down the whole breakdown of the whole shoe industry, which I happen to know a bunch of just because of playing. But he was like, yeah, that's just the myth of sneaker shoes trying to sell you high tops, trying to sell you basketball shoes. So I came out with low tops. I was like, yeah, then you tore your Achilles tendon. And then you have those, remember, I don't know, those ones that come up to like your calf. He's like, yeah, those were terrible. I hated those shoes. But like Kobe literally changed the game of sneakers.
He did. And then you got people you got the Currys and Curry. What it is about the sneakers, basketball sneakers though, there's certain people, certain players whose shoe is only a basketball shoe. And people wouldn't rock them casually.
Right.
There's a lot of shoes like that. So LeBron's shoe falls under that category a lot.
Yes. Well, that's because he's a gigantic man. And so he needs gigantic man shoes, right? They sell some low tops there, but nobody rocks. Nobody goes out to the club wearing some, oh, you got some LeBrons on? Oh, those are nice. Like, no, they are boats. Like, that's the problem with him being 6'8", 260 is like his shoes are just too big.
Yeah, they are huge.
Okay. So are you going, like, are you going to go hang? Like, what is your post Laker championship plan? Just hang at the house? Are you like, let me know if there's a party, I'm on my way? What is the plan?
I have a studio session.
You have a studio session?
Yeah, I got a studio session. Yeah.
Do you only record at night?
I usually start the session. I'm gonna usually leave the house after dinner. So yeah. Usually leave that, but I'm not gonna probably. I'm probably not gonna come back till next dinner time. So yeah, I'm in there forever.
The whole night, the whole day.
Doug, I just learned how to cut my sessions down from 28 hours. I had to learn how to cut them from 28 hours down to 18. I just learned this year how to finally chop them down to 12 hours. So if I go in there at 10 p.m., I make sure that I be aware that when I see 10 a.m., to tell myself your engineer has been here 12 hours. Cause it ain't about me. I could be in there 1,000 hours. I just have to remind myself that your engineer has been here. And if I don't want him to get too tired and start messing up, cause then I start getting mad and I have to remind myself, he's not a robot, you are.
You got like this really cool kind of gravelly voice, right? But you go back to when you're like 12, like when did you feel like you got to this kind of like perfect pitch to where your voice is now? Like that's your most recognizable piece. Cause I've heard you on some other collabs recently and I can pick you out right away. But I feel like your voice has gotten to this distinct. It's been the same last 7 years or so. Yeah. When has it gotten to this spot?
I'd say 19, 20. I probably locked into that tone and didn't let it go. Yeah.
And then you can kind of be your, but what's great is that's your actual speaking voice, right? Like
voice. Yeah. Some actual voice. And had to be told that by the late great Miss Betty Wright. Miss Betty Wright was one of the main people that taught me that, you know, the way you talk, she's like, you know, singing. She's like, don't you understand that singing is about being unique? It's not like, you know, the people that know how to go, she's like, that's them. She said, those are the people that's actually trying. She's like, baby, she's like, singing is about being, you were born with a voice that everybody is not used to hearing. And she's like, now you learn, now it's on you to learn how to stretch it and make it sound listenable or hearable and beautiful to everyone's ears. And she was like, you do that by just talking. She's like, so now it's up to you to stretch it. Shout out Miss Betty Wright.
That's awesome. That's an amazing thing. Like to be able to have confidence in your own voice and not have to change it, not have to figure out, because then it's, we have this a little bit in my business where some guys are in character, right? And they're in character on TV.
Are you not? Right?
And then they come off of TV and it's totally different. Like, completely different.
Yeah.
And I do think that, you know, once you can find kind of your authentic voice, authentic style, everything becomes a lot easier. Then you don't have to change. Wait, who am I now? What am I doing now?
Exactly. Which one am I not? Which one am I right now? Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Last thing. You've been more than gracious with your time. Okay. So you mentioned you're going to studio session.
Yeah.
Right. Who's in there? Who is allowed into your studio session? Like, is it just, I want me, my engineer, my producer, and that's it, or what?
The producer, you went too far with the producer. It's just me and my engineer.
And so you're just, are you writing everything or are you just recording tracks and going back over it?
I don't write nothing. I've been start writing when I was about 17. I just go, this is from here. You got to feel it.
So how do you say you go 12 hours, then you come home, you come back, you pick it up right where you were. You have it still kind of in your brain as to what, where you were and where you want to go with it.
I have so much to do. You know, I always have a feature or two to do a night. Trust me. I mean, and I always have somebody's song that requires a verse, a feature verse on. Thank God it's always that way. So I'm always do that first. Take care of the person's feature. I'm gonna do that first. But as far as my stuff, I thank God that I always say the same prayer that I thank God that I'm doing what I love and get to do what I love and love what I'm doing to still love what I'm doing. It's never
been. You mentioned the feature because, okay. So I hear your feature on all kinds of stuff, right? Yeah. Do you ever get one? Do you agree to it before hearing it? Or do you go like, I got to hear it first? And like, okay, I'll do something on this.
I never have to hear it first. I'm always going to agree to do the feature. I love to collaborate. I love to do it. I love to.
But what if it's a terrible song?
That's the challenge. I like to make it not a terrible song because I'm on it.
That's amazing. That you never like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. With anybody, like you've never said, I ain't doing that one.
If I have said that, I have. And it's probably because the song may have been sensed on it. The song may have said something in it that I didn't agree with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's happened before plenty of time.
But you love doing those features thing?
What? Yeah, I love it, man. I love to hear myself with someone else because I'm always a fan of music. So I'm always a fan of whoever giving me the song. And so if it's my first time doing something together, I'm really excited.
All right, you got to sell somebody out for me. Okay, so I'll give you a quick story. I'm not going to name the name, but it's a friend. I think you actually, I could tell you off air, you might know who it is, but a friend of mine is a country artist. And I'll never forget, and when he first got big in it, he was an opening act for a lot of people.
Okay.
And I went to see him and I was like, man, you were kind of a little off tonight. Like, what happened? He's like, catwalk was closed. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, I was doing my sound check and I started like to go down the catwalk, and the guy from the main act band was like, hey, catwalk's for our lead singer. Now, I'll tell you, the act was Rascal Flatts, okay. Right? This guy wasn't with Rascal Flatts. He was touring with Rascal Flatts.
Right.
And he was like, wait, what? He's like, yeah, and catwalk's closed to anybody else. Mm-hmm. So he was cool with everybody, but like the catwalk being closed was just the weirdest. He didn't ask anything, and it was just a couple of shows, and that was it. Has there ever been a guy or somebody who you perform with who were like, man, like that was not as enjoyable as I thought it would be, because we didn't know each other beforehand?
Not at all. Thank God. I told you I love to perform, so I don't care if you told me to go out here and say my ABCs. I'm going to say it better than anybody you ever heard say it. I don't care who I got to be up there with. We're going to have a time of our lives up there.
You know what's interesting? You mentioned the Cash Money guys. Cash Money guys, still very big.
Yeah.
Okay, No Limit guys, not so big. So you guys were there before, and you guys are after. Is there any rivalry, or does rivalry not exist because they're really not existent now?
No, him and P and my dad, baby, they cool as hell. They cool. Everybody, everybody trying to make the most of every day now these days, truthfully.
Yeah. No, and P could hoop a little bit. Not as much as he thought he could hoop, but he could definitely hoop.
Oh, P can hoop. P could hoop.
Well, I mean, but he was like preseason with the Hornets. Like, he's not that, he went easy, right? Like, I can hoop. I never got a preseason NBA game, and P's playing preseason with it. Like, whoa, what? Right? Brian McKnight, I think, did that too. You're like, wait,
I got with the Raptors. I can see that. I don't know about. I don't remember Brian.
I think Brian McKnight got a little run.
Wow. Brian McKnight got a little. I know P got some run. I know for a fact. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, let's chop it up in person at some point in time. I know you got a studio session to get to. Congrats on the Lakers. It was amazing for you to spend this much time with us, and thank you so much for joining me.
Man, love, man. It's all love. Appreciate it, dog. For real.
Thanks, Wayne. How much fun was that, huh? That was fun. Make sure you tell your friends, subscribe, download, rate, listen, tell a friend, pass it on, forward it on social media, put it on Facebook, whatever you want. The guy's a great dude. I've met him 3 times in person. Every time I walk away going like, that's a great guy. Are we actually friends now? I feel like the answer is yes. Once you share like an hour long Zoom with somebody post championship, the answer is yes, right? The answer is absolutely yes. Anyway, my thanks to Lil Wayne. My thanks to our production crew for making this thing happen. And congratulations to the Lakers, to all of LA. If you thought LA people were obnoxious, wait till the Dodgers. And then if SC wins as well, oh my God, everybody. Just don't come to LA. People are going to be obnoxious. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to listen to the radio show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you download this, you can download that show. In the meantime, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.